Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
It's Extra Beans!
Hooray for Extra Beans!
Rejoice, Extra Beans is here.
You're really spoiling us with these beans. So many beans this
Thank
week.
You, patrons. Month.
Thank
yes.
you, thank you.
Thank you
very
so much,
much. Indeed.
Thank you.
We're back again with Extra Beans.
Yes.
Our bean trolley quakes.
Overfloweth.
And overfloweth.
Me think ye just beaneth too much. To a beanery.
To the bean fields.
When we walked in fields of beans.
Oh. I had some cannellinis last night, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did it go down smooth?
In a sausage casserole.
Oh, very good. I was about to ask you how you deployed them.
That's a they do match up well, don't they?
So nice.
Very good.
Well, there's some soft red onions in there and sort of draped
hearty.
Over the sausages.
You've gone hearty for the autumn. You've gone for hearty nosh now.
Mm. Yeah. Leeks.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm going to might have to do that. I might have to sausage and cannellini casserole myself.
Autumnal cooking for me, it's one pot stuff and it's your tube or vegetables.
Brown, bubbling pot.
Brown, bubbling pot full of... You're kind of like, it's all your sort of like witchcraft, pagan, earthy root veg. So it's your carrots.
If it's not going to ruin your beige chinos, forget it, basically.
Exactly.
It's the kind of veg that if you put a spell on could turn into a weird little homunculus.
Yes.
100%. It's the kind of veg where if you were to draw eyes on it, it would freak out a child.
Yeah.
And I've got some left over and I'm having it for lunch, which is going to take place in about 10 minutes.
Oh, curse you.
Yeah. I'm in a really good place. That's what I want to say.
You are in a great place right now.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy that, dear listener, thinking of Ben noshing away on his seconds, on his leftovers. And while you do that, why not listen to a bit of Extra Beans? For example, this chunk from the teeth episode.
So have either of you ever had anything like a real, like, big dental horror thing? Like, I've never had a root canal. I live in absolute fear of that.
No, I've never even had my wisdom teeth out. I'm still waiting for those guys.
Yeah, mine are still. So my dentist says to me that one day my wisdom teeth are going to cause me absolute agony.
You've got a kind of ticking time bomb.
Yeah. Oh. And so they're like, yeah, that's going to be a problem one day. You just never know when.
Oh, that's nice.
And I assumed it would have happened by now, but apparently not. Can happen, you know. Could happen on my deathbed.
Is it worth seeing a dentist at this point? They'll have to wheel me to the dentists.
No. Yeah, that thought is always at the back of my mind. Like, oh god, because I know that I'll have booked like the holiday of a lifetime.
You'll
there'll be
finally
something
going be on your
that it will absolutely ruin
your Scandinavian cruise that you've dreamed of all those years.
Yeah.
No, the only work I did have a chipped tooth that someone did repair.
So I did. So what did they do? Because I'd love to know what happens there.
I can't remember. I was quite small. I just jumped into a swimming pool, not realising there was a small wall at the bottom of the swimming pool. I just went chest first into it, and it sort of snapped one of my front teeth in half. And someone just, I don't know, I think they just fashioned a bit of... I've got half a false tooth, basically. Someone glued on, and it's managed to stay there ever since. And beyond that, I just had braces. I had the old braces.
Oh, yeah.
I had braces.
Quite a crap orthodontist who made me wear braces for 2 years. And then there was absolutely no change after that whatsoever.
Really?
To the point I even told him. Well, I didn't tell him. I asked him, look, I've already been told I've got quite a small gob and my teeth are all bunched up. I've got this mate who had a couple of teeth removed. Are we doing that? No.
Yeah, to make space.
We don't need to do that. Oh, really? Okay. Well, how does it work then? We're just doing it. Here we go. Don't worry about it. I'll give you some multicoloured bands so you've got a fun-looking mouth. Leave those in for 2 years. And then
but did he not remove any
didn't
teeth?
Didn't remove any teeth. No, he just...
Because if you've got too many teeth in a mouth, reorganising them isn't going to help. You need to get some out.
Yeah. I mean, I already knew that from playground talk, from other people's braces.
Was he trying to rearrange them into two rows? So you have, like, front and back.
So two rows of teeth?
Like a shark.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tiered teeth.
Yeah, like a small regional theatre.
That's finally got a little bit of a grant. Yeah, so I had this sort of foul, multicoloured gob for a couple of years. No change.
Yeah, I had that as well.
What was the multicoloured thing supposed to do?
Well, because you were a child, they thought you'd rather have colourful mouth than grey mouth. But
grey mouth probably, because actually the multicoloured mouth, it just looks like you always have got some food stuck in your braces. That's just what it looks like. It just looks disgusting.
Just very long lateral food, very long sort of thin, stretchy.
Did you choose your colours, Mike?
No. I had no agency in this process whatsoever.
And you will like it. Yeah. I chose mine, but I chose black and lime green.
Ooh.
Absolutely. Sort of like a tropical sort of poisonous tree frog.
I remember I had an orthodontist. He was called Mr. Wimpole. And he was quite a Dickensian sort of character. I remember
he sounds Dickensian.
Yeah. I remember he had two things about him. One is he had a strange, circular, very flat candle burning next to him at all times.
Yeah. A handsome cab outside.
He's always talking about Prince Albert and what a shame it was that he'd passed on.
But I didn't know what that was. It was a strange. It was like a quite a big pancake sort of size and proportions. This candle with a little wick in the middle burning, and it wasn't clear whether it was there to create light or whether it was
or to stop the typhoid
or to deter the various ghosts that accompanied him wherever he went.
Of old Mr. MacReady, the owner of the workhouse.
He also had a last will and testament that he was always penning.
And never completed.
Never completed. Yes, he'd occasionally sort of dip a quill into my mouth and keep writing it. It was quite weird. And I remember the light of this little candle would cast incredible shadows from the very, very long moles that he had coming out of his face.
Moles?
Moles. You know, face moles.
Oh, I see. Yes.
No. So he had these face moles that were very, very long. They protruded very, very far out of his face, a bit like tentacles.
So he helpfully also looks like a character out of Punch magazine.
He really did. So he had these tentacular sort of moles.
Yeah.
And they'd cast long shadows across his face from the strange candle.
You say this man was your orthodontist?
I believe he was my orthodontist, and he was called Mr. Wimpole.
Are you the only person who's ever had an imaginary friend that was an orthodontist?
He did feel quite made up, I've got to say. He also, his waiting room, that's right, had these strange felt pictures. they'd be like...
Of his son who was away at the Boer War.
There are these pictures made of felt that you would, like, there'd be a felt cat and a felt donkey and a felt chicken and a felt sort of farm scene, and you would move them around on the felt background as you waited for him. It wasn't just analog, it was just
pro. It's whatever came before analog.
What was before analog?
Feltalog.
Feltalog. It was a very feltalog experience. But he gave me the brace, which is the one that has a kind of pink fake roof of mouth that goes with it.
Oh, and you can take it out.
Yeah.
In company, yeah.
Clipped in and just the whole thing stank to high heaven. It was just the smelliest objects I've ever come across.
Yeah, after my brace, I had to wear those retainer things that people sometimes have. And because I was 14 or whatever, you're meant to wash it every day. But fuck me, it started going green. Like it was like the inside of a fish tank.
Yeah, my guy didn't bother with them.
Well, there's no point with yours.
Exactly.
Basically, Mike, every dentist you've seen has been a fraud dentist, apart from the lovely Amanda.
Amanda, yeah. Amanda, the family dentist. That's the thing. I mean, she was the gold standard. She was the benchmark. The bar was set very high in my childhood, and I've been brutally disappointed ever since.
But then what you're saying is you never had any problems with your teeth, did you? So Amanda was just giving you a clean bill of health all the time, right? Was she actually doing anything?
She was being... What did she do?
Exactly, Mike.
Well, she gave me a good old look up and down. She scraped off a bit of plaque here and there.
Okay.
A little bit of brushing advice. I think she was top drawer. I think I've got quite healthy gnashes, and I thank Amanda for that.
Have you got any fillings at the moment?
No.
Oh, God. You're one of these people. You've got tooth pride, haven't you?
I do.
You've got excessive tooth pride.
I was raised that way.
I've got four fillings. I had them all in the course of 1 year.
Was that the year you discovered sherbet?
You moved to London.
Genuinely, this is what happened. I moved to London.
Yeah.
I was a student. I thought I need to be healthier because I'm largely eating ham paninis and Guinness. And I need to sort this out. So I don't know why I did this. I bought a mini fridge.
Yeah.
And every day I'd go to Budgens and I'd buy a litre of orange juice and drink it.
Ooh.
Over the course of the day.
So I was, oh, not even in one go and then brush your teeth, but just slowly, just
slowly steeping it in acid,
yeah,
all day.
Absolute acid so, bath. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was drinking 7 liters of very, very cheap kind of caustic. You know that from caustic orange juice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
it's toilet cleaner.
Yeah.
Orange juice.
It's from concentrate, isn't it? I mean, it's from. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't specify what the concentrated thing was.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a strong acid.
Yeah. And it's almost got, it's got a sort of texture to it, which is not quite a liquid. It's almost like it has a wobble or it has a.
Oh,
kind
it's viscous.
Of,
oh, yeah.
It's so dense. Yeah. It's incredibly viscous. And you could dissolve corpses in that. You can clean tractors with it.
Yeah. So essentially my first year of university, I was drinking 7 litres of 35p litre orange juice a week.
Yeah.
And it absolutely did a number on my mouth.
Yeah. And your ass, I would have thought as well.
And my dentist was like, my ass?
I'd have thought so.
Does orange juice do things to your ass? I mean, my ass has always been an absolute mess.
It makes some people get a bit of a squits if they've got too much orange juice.
I think I was probably too busy focusing on the constant dull tooth pain that I was experiencing.
But your vitamin C levels would have been through the roof, on the other hand.
Oh, I was never healthier. But my teeth were a mess, but I was never healthier, Henry. Yeah, I was vital.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dentist went, so why do you think this is happening? Has your diet changed? Are you drinking a lot of acidic drinks?
And you're like, just give me a minute, mate. hang on, just give me a sec. Ow! No, I can't think what it is at all. No, nothing's changed. Sorry, I just need to apply an alkaline paste to my face. I have to do this constantly throughout the day.
To eat some chalk.
Let's eat some more chalk, and I'm just going to paint a crayon. I'm just painting my mouth here with crayons, and I just make it look like a tiger just for a bit of fun, but it's just to counteract the the extreme acid.
The physical will subside in a few minutes. Don't worry about that.
Yeah,
because they were looking at my mouth and they were saying, you're the person who's got the least scurvy I've ever seen, but on the other hand...
Yeah, you've actually got negative scurvy.
I think I did have negative scurvy. I think that's what happened. So don't do that, kids, if you're listening. If you're 18 and you think that the shortcut to health is litres and litres of orange juice, it's not.
Well, thank goodness there was an intervention, Benjamin.
Yes, and not a filling since, I'd like to say.
Otherwise, yeah, because we're not really a generation that's particularly used to people having dentures in their 20s and 30s, are we? Which is quite good.
Is dentures false teeth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because does that still exist? I'm looking from an illustrator's perspective now.
Oh, the teeth in a glass of water next to the bed.
Teeth in a glass of water as a symbol of, you know, old age, whatever.
Old age. I don't know. I don't even know if they keep them in a glass of water. I have no idea.
Is it... This might sound really stupid. Is it now the expectation that I will get to my death, if I live a long life, with my teeth sort of basically fine? Or will they still be rubbish by the end?
I think the expectation is that you will go to Turkey.
They'll be filed down to tiny nubs.
They'll be filed down to nubs. You'll then have a set of what look like white Tic Tacs glued up, into your gums, but which are in fact a knockoff brand that imitates Tic Tacs, just a slightly cheaper mint. They're called Toc Tocs. They're very, very similar.
Yeah, they'll dissolve slowly what's left of the base of your teeth into the root.
Yeah, so that by the time you get back to Cardiff Airport, you'll be bleeding downwards from the teeth and upwards from the eyes.
Have you seen what it looks like? You know when they put the veneers on and they do file down the teeth to like a little nub? Yeah. Do you know this?
Yeah. I do know this, yeah.
Do you know this, Mike?
I don't know about this, no.
People are going to Turkey to get...
So in order... You know when you see a celebrity and they've got those big sort of white teeth?
Great big white gnashes.
Yeah.
What they've done to their actual teeth is they've filed them up down to like little tiny...
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, like little
really?
Nubs.
Yeah,
so they can put the thing on the nub.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. If you see a picture of it, it's...
But does the thing stay on the nub forever? Is that like a little set of dentures, or is it stuck on permanently?
Stuck on, but they won't last forever.
Well, what if an architect or a builder was to say to you, they've got two options for your house, Mike. Yeah. We can either build it on foundations, or we can build it on a very, 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 very small nub. What would you go for?
Why is anyone doing that?
I genuinely think, and it, you know, if you're listening and you've got them, I'm sure they look brilliant. But I think that we're going to have a generation of people who reach their 80s, won't be able to afford all their nubs, sort of got so sort of fucked over the years that they'll just be these people with like nubby.
The nub technologists would have all died by then. The skills would have been lost because there'll be a new thing happening.
That's true, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But also, everyone will be using Instagram filters, but in real life.
Black mirror, black mirror.
Meow, 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 meow. Oh, I'm logging into my face. What's my face password? Oh, have I got facial recognition for my own face software yet? Don't know, it's confusing.
I'm unsubscribing from my own thoughts.
Scary, isn't it?
It's a good point, though. In the metaverse, we don't need teeth. You just plug in the nozzle. Mike's been at the nozzle all month. You plug in the nozzle into a sort of stoma on your side and then log into the metaverse.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it, is the conclusion.
Weirdly, I've got some teeth. I've had some teeth. I had some teeth removed when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I had some teeth yanked out.
Were they removed for rot or to make space?
I can't actually. I think they were maybe removed
for punishment.
I think it was a mixture.
An interrogation,
like all dentistry, it's a mixture of punishment and rehabilitation. Isn't it? It's both, so it's a blend.
Like every best Swedish prison,
exactly.
Of rod and carrot.
And I do remember the odd sensation of have you had teeth removed, you two? I've forgotten.
No.
I've had four removed, yeah.
Oh, you've had four, yeah. So it's weird feeling.
Oh, God, it's awful.
They're probably putting the heel of their boot in your armpit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because that's it. Because when I went, I assumed, they'll have some sort of procedure where... But no, it's not. There's no procedure. It's literally just brute strength.
Pair of pliers.
And there's a pair of pliers.
Yeah.
Like, is that bad? I mean, I couldn't believe it. I thought, no, we're in modern...
Pair of pliers, tied to a bit of string on the doorknob, give it a kick.
It feels like it's one of the few medical procedures you can have that is the same as it would have been in 1300, basically. Yeah. There's no...
It's back of a wagon stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just literally, how do you get that thing out of that thing?
What would you use? I'd use pliers.
Yeah.
I mean, the same answer applies for, nails, teeth, anything.
Yeah.
But it really is, isn't it, Henry? It's so...
It's like being in a carpenter's workshop. It's experiencing carpentry from the wood's point of view. it is what it's like. So, yeah, you feel the tug of the... Normally, you're the one...
I can barely think of it.
You're the one tugging something out of something. So your brain's going, well, that's weird. I'm not a tuggy.
I'm the tugger.
I'm the tugger. It's a completely different role in life. There's this... resistance that you don't know what quite to do. Do I go with the tug, or do I resist the tug? Actually, by resisting the tug,
I feel quite lightheaded.
By resisting the tug, you help him, and what he does is, in my case anyway, that's what the...
Was this Mr. Wimpole? Was he using an old hook formerly used on the prow of the HMS?
It's either that or some sort of elaborate Heath Robinson-esque style contraption. Prototype he's trying out for the first time.
Steam powered.
On a 9-year-old Henry Packer.
He had a series of steam-powered sort of whale ribs that were attached together in a wheel shape around a central rat skull. And water was being poured in at the top on these little miniature buckets, which was making that rotate.
And his assistant was getting increasingly nervous. And the assistant was already a macaque, which was unsettling to begin with.
And even the ghosts effed off at that point. They were like, bloody hell. And I remember at one point, I realised this is when I noticed that the shadows being cast by his face moles were starting to rotate. I realised I was actually on the roof of the building at that point, and I was part of a contraption that was rotating like a huge sort of windmill. Yeah.
Because he had to catch the solstice at exactly the right time. Otherwise, the mechanism wouldn't trigger.
Yeah.
My God, it works. My God, it's truly happening.
Yeah, and then he just used the other side of a hammer and just sort of yanked it out.
Became a member of the Royal Society.
The age of steam is upon us, Henry.
Out, out they come.
I've done it. I've done it.
More ivory for the pianos.
I swore I would do one of two things with my life. Find a passage through the Arctic. or remove this fiend's fang.
Did he plant a little Union Jack in the gap?
Yep.
I told you, Father! And from the episode Hats, you might have thought that Henry was done talking about his overnight exciting sleep train journey to Edinburgh, but he sure wasn't. Here's a little bit more.
There was a lot of tweed on the train, because obviously they'd gone, in the 70s, they'd gone, right, we need to lean into the heritage of Scotland, but also the future of Scotland, which, as we all know, is intergalactic tweed. Domination.
Tweed? Traditional clan tweeds?
Intergalactic tweed.
The McKendrick herringbone. Many a man has dropped his drawers when he's seen that herringbone across the battlefield.
And I tell you, that will be the first herringbone, the first tweed to enter a black hole over my dead body. And it'll be the first tweed to travel back in time and retweed itself at its own inception, becoming perma-tweed. Oh, I wonder what pattern I'll make this tweed. Wow, wow, wow. Meow, meow. that was too complex. Forget that.
That's the good thing about this future, isn't it? I mean, if at any moment of social awkwardness, you can simply go really get yourself out of anything.
You get yourself out of a lot of trouble.
Just back out of the room going everyone will take cover. By the time they've looked up, you've gone.
I could really do with that being the rules of society. It would help me. So basically, there was a lot of panels, right? So there was a lot of beige. So you enter the train, you have to reset your kind of palette, your world palette spectrum to the beige spectrum. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of panels. So there'll be a panel that's just beige and then a panel that's like tweed. So it's like futuristic tweed because it's tweed, but it's in the form of a panel.
Mm-hmm.
Meow. Mm-hmm. There's a dining car with like triangular tables that I've never seen before, ever. They've obviously gone, right, we need this to be the future of travel.
Which way did they go? Was that the point of it going into the ground? incredibly thin surface to put your sandwich on.
You can lay one noodle over the top. So the triangles are kind of coming in at you. It was very hard to know. So you'd have to be...
So if the train crashed, it would just go straight in.
Instant death. Instant death. But, you know, it's dystopian 70s future. That's almost...
Yeah, life is cheap.
In keeping with it. Yeah. Life is cheap. And so the menu... So everything was futuristic about this dining car. Mm-hmm. Beige, tweed panels, triangular tables.
Microwaved foods.
Bing! I tell you what.
Your roast dinner is ready in 2 minutes. What a time to be alive.
I'll have the venison, please.
And it comes in the form of a pill, which you'll never be able to fully prove one way or the other. It was actually not just paracetamol or not. You can't prove it. And we'll be in London in 2 hours. And by the time, it'd be too late.
I know you still feel hungry, but that's just because you haven't adjusted to the pill diet. Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah. And I know it feels a lot, £26, but it was a really good, you have to take my word for it. It was an excellent roast meal.
It was free range venison, gallivanting around the lowlands.
Only the finest.
Pennines.
Only the finest.
Shot personally by Prince Edward, the 18th.
Yeah. And I know that, as you said, I guess it's exactly the same shape and size as that paracetamol, that branded paracetamol pill that you're showing to demonstrate this. But that's because you make the pills, you take them to pill formers, and there's only a few of them that do it. They form it into the same shape. You know what I mean? We don't control the shape of the pill. We control the quality.
These people
are
artisans, you understand? Okay, we can't intrude.
We can't. It's what they do. So the menu. So the restaurant vibe was very futuristic, but the menu was
old McTweedy Haggis's McTweed pouch.
It was the most. Is that too much?
Well, it depends what you're going to tell us. I mean,
yeah.
Depends if that's come from them or from you, really. As to whether or not you are cancelled north of the border.
But basically, what it was, ultra twee Scottish sort of menu.
Oh, they were going for it. They were leaning into
it. Was McTweedy's
we're going to Scotland, so let's.
Well, like a smoked haddock Victoria sponge.
Yeah.
with a picture of a bare-chested man with holding a claymore on the top of a hill somewhere.
Exactly. So that's why it felt so futuristic, because it was like, that's all we have left of Earth now, is these phrases like this McTweedy's
vague impression of...
Yeah, exactly. But the food is on a triangular table that will kill you, and it's in pill form, because that is the dystopian future you're living in. And tweed, I'm afraid, you don't wear tweeds anymore. It's a panel now. In fact, some people didn't even know... It's not even clear if people even know what tweed was initially used for, which obviously was making trousers and dresses. But they don't know that anymore. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
They don't know which animal it's skinned from, do they?
Exactly.
Do you think, Henry, that the internals of the sleeper train are different going up to Scotland from coming back down from Scotland? So going Scotland to London, they're kind of introducing you to this kind of futuristic world. Because then when you get off in Euston or wherever...
Yeah,
you
are
in
Houston,
futuristic London.
You're in the future.
With its Pretz and its...
It's Pretz, it's
electro heraldry trumpets.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cybertronic beef eaters.
Exactly.
Whereas I wonder whether the train's going up, it's more your kind of small pigs walking around on the floor, a lot of hay.
Woad.
Yeah, woad.
I think you might well be right. The other sort of vibe it had was... It sort of had future prison elements to it as well. Uh-huh. You know, that kind of...
Were you being constantly monitored by a drone?
It felt like I probably was. I mean, at one point in my cabin, I heard a voice going, are you all right? And it was because I was pressed.
Are you dying or wanking?
Because the Saturday you're making...
It's the foreman, I'll come in and... But I won't... If it's the last, obviously, because you've paid for the non-interruption ticket. So
are you dying or wanking? Because in only one of those situations, am I prepared to finish you off?
Oh, lovely. Very good.
I did press a button at one point, and I heard a voice going, "You all right?" And I was trying to open the window.
You pressed the panic button.
But I pressed the talk to the guy button, and It was a button world. That was the other thing that was quite dystopian about it. Everything was buttons. You couldn't yank open the window.
No.
You had to press a button and trust that the mechanisms...
Yeah. That you weren't going to bring the whole train to an abrupt halt.
Exactly. But it was quite... The other thing, it was very compact. So it did have that futuristic prison. It was quite like, you know, the toilet is a shower.
Yeah. The sink is a coat hook. The bedside table is also the bed.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also the toilet and the shower.
Were you sharing this cell with someone else?
And the exit. No, it was a solo cell.
Yeah, they're not generally, the cabins aren't built for two from memory. Maybe that such things exist.
Well, I think in the old days it used to be, because there was the fittings of a bed above my
one, little
you
bunk.
Could fold down.
Aye,
but, okay. But it was fixed, but it had been abolished or fixed into the wall or whatever. It wasn't an option.
Been welded in.
I think the two people in that space would have been really like...
Absolute sort of marriage finisher time.
Total marriage destroyer. Yeah.
Well, starter and destroyer, I think.
In one overnight journey.
Yeah. And there's and there's a button you can press to initiate divorce proceedings. That's next to the window button. It's got various different buttons. There's a dispenser for engagement rings as well. As you said, so the whole...
Yeah. And it exudes a weird sort of gas that means that any pregnancy is accelerated to the point where by the time you get into Edinburgh, that child has been fully grown and has left for you first. If you get the right ticket.
In the same way that when you see a London policeman wearing one of the tall hats, their famous tall hats, what you should say to them is... Excuse me, sir or madam, does your hat go all the way to the top of that? Head. Plus they don't wear them anymore. But anyway.
It's a helmet rather than
do you have... So what you should say to them is, does your head go all the way to the top of that helmet? Sorry, no. What you should say to them is...
About discontinued helmet?
By the way, if you are talking to someone who's wearing one of those, they're almost certainly in fancy dress or a stag do or something.
In 1983, for example.
You could be okay. So you go, what you're supposed to say to them is, you go, excuse me, sir or madam, does your head go all the way to the top of that?
Did your head?
Did your... Did your head used to go to the
also,
top
women,
of those
I don't
helmets.
Think, ever used to wear them. They used to have the
flat women ones, never wore them. Yep.
Yeah.
So you would say, did your head ever go to the top? Did it go to the top of those helmets? What I'm really asking is, in a way, do you have a normal shaped head or do you have a little bit of extra head? Like these, like this, a little bit of extra chat on the topic of hats. Yeah?
Great. Very good. Very good.
Your moustache is there as a visual balance.
Yes, that's
because
right.
We know that if you were to not have the moustache, people look at you and they assume that either the building is, either there's an earthquake happening. Mm. Or there's extreme sudden subsidence is happening in the room, so people get off a bit that's off right. balance, don't they? And so you, in a way, because so you by putting that lateral, it's sort of like facial. It's face shoey, isn't it?
It's face shoey. It's a safety measure.
It's like a kind of spirit level. Is that what you're saying, Henry?
Exactly. It's like a spirit level.
Because otherwise, people will be like, "Is this ship sinking?"
Yeah, or it's like a sort of like some people require a sort of comfort animal, sort of reassurance, sort of medical, sort of companion dog.
Yes,
it's like that. It's a companion dog for the face.
Yeah, and if you really focus on Mike's face while he's walking around, it's a bit unusual. It's a bit like if you've ever seen those cameras that people use at football matches. There's like it's on a kind of
it's on a high wire over the top of a pitch. Yeah.
Not that one. The one that's kind of attached to a person, but it kind of floats along.
Those sort of Steadicam things.
A big gimbal.
Steadicam.
Yeah.
It's a gimbal. So it's using gimbal technology and rotoscope technology.
Yes.
Whereby something appears to be rotating, but also maintaining its sort of spatial integrity around a point.
But the moustache itself is always at the same height above sea level.
Very hard when you go on a plane, isn't it, Mike?
But it does mean
moustache going at 600 miles an hour, 6 foot above the ground.
Getting leapt over by dolphins. Smashing its way through cargo ships. Yeah, that's why I don't fly, generally, if I don't have to.
But, of course, the benefit of that is that your moustache has been hermit crab free now for how long?
Oh, it's a good five years, I'd say. 5 years.
Since it was... Because it was riddled with crabs.
Yeah, yeah. Since we did that Kickstarter and finally managed to raise enough money to get me fully de-crabs.
De-hermit crab Mike's face. Yeah. Yeah, it was a big hashtag, that wasn't it?
And I do appreciate that, guys, because without your support, we wouldn't have been able to fully de-crab it. And you've got to fully de-crab, because if you don't fully de-crab...
if there's just one hermit crab left in a moustache.
Or even a crab hermitage. Do you know what I mean? Even if there's just...
Even a crab hermitage. Mm. Yeah. Or even just a normal crab, but with a hermit-like disposition.
Yeah.
Because any crab can become a hermit crab. You know, it's a job more than those species, isn't it?
It's a choice. It's a calling.
Exactly. In the same way that any person can become a hermit crab.
And in the same way that we all will eventually become hermit crabs, as we've well established.
Well, any animal can become a hermit version of that animal. So you can hermit fox.
And for me, that's something I've had struggled to come with to terms with in a way, because in a way I'm the opposite. Even though I'm heading towards final crab, I'm the opposite of a crab. Because I don't suit hats. What is a crab? But essentially a hat that is...
Well, a mandibled hat.
A mandibled hat.
A crab does have a sort of wedding hat vibe, doesn't it?
Mm.
It's
showy,
It's a showy...
Ladies day kind of thing.
It's a ladies day
hat. It's an attack-resistant fascinator, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got a really... it's hard to pull off a big flat crab on your head, but some people can do it, isn't it? You know, like there's those people that can just walk into a room, big flat.
Well, Henry does, I think. Henry's always always
can suit
hats.
Crab.
You can suit any hat, really.
And one thing advice I'll say is actually people often get this wrong. It's actually easier to wear when the crab's alive, a big flat crab.
Ah, okay.
Because the crab
because they naturally go to a naturally coquettish angle, don't they?
That is the angle they instantly adopt because they're trying to reach toward because they're trying to reach down towards the vol-au-vents.
Yeah. Or to your earlobe to pull it off and eat it.
and that's why it's called a crabbish angle. His hat was her hat was at a crabbish angle.
A crab is born knowing that angle and seeking that angle. That's instinctively.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, is just very simple, which is that a live crab doesn't want to fall off your head, whereas a dead crab is
indifferent.
Doesn't mind.
Doesn't mind. So you're better off with that live crab.
Keep it moist.
The hat.
Yes.
Mm. Hats in general. Or just.
It's good advice for any hat, but I think when you've got a live crab, it's kind of.
Well, if you go to Ladies' Day or any of these big old functions that still go on in this country, the person as you go in, there'll be a person normally with a tray with drinks, and they'll say, you know, champagne or orange juice, and they'll say, and something for the crab.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the debutante, you know, the where you release your when a child comes of age, they get released into a debutante's ball where they travel around on a giant crab, don't they? and the
yeah,
crab
shuttles around. They're shuttled
for mates. Sure. Yeah.
They're shuttled around from
eligible chinless bastard to eligible chinless bastard.
Shuttled around on a crab. And of course, that dance, you know, the dances they do when they're putting their hands up.
Mm, like in Pride and Prejudice.
That's to release their armpit crabs.
That's to release the armpit crabs, which swarm.
They've got love notes tucked under their shells.
Exactly.
And they see who's interested.
They swarm the room. And then the debutante herself, who's been, what's it called?
Finished.
Not released. No,
there is a word for it. You're right.
Let loose.
Mm. Something like that. But she would travel then on the giant crab through that tunnel of hands with all the mini crabs writhing around her with the different love notes. Mm. Her crab is attacking and killing the smaller crabs, mm-hmm. as all crabs do automatically around smaller crabs. And then the surviving mini crab, if there is one.
They get bigger and bigger with each crab they eat, don't they?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
So at the end, you've got a very amorous mega crab.
That's right. And you then hollow it out and eat its flesh with your chosen partner.
Mike, the idea that you've not got the right head for a hat.
Yes,
I would say
yeah.
You just haven't found the right hat yet.
Well, that's very generous of you, but I feel.
And have you considered the Carmen Miranda style fruit headdress?
You know what, Ben? That's a lovely idea.
That isn't a bad shout. Because the problem is not enough head, really. So I'm.
Yeah, you'd be
the cats are too small, aren't they? I should be going sombrero minimum.
I think it's the full fruit bowl, Mike. Because I'm picturing
the full tropical
those bananas.
Yeah,
and like a big set of bananas.
A couple of pineapples,
some kiwis. Can some of the kiwis be chopped in half so you can see that?
Yeah,
nice green?
You want to get that bit of sheen, don't you? Some grapes cascading down the side.
I'm picturing some red grapes cascading down over your left ear.
Mm. Pomegranate seed fountain at the top to activate when I get excited.
Yeah.
You see what I mean, Mike?
Well, maybe that's it.
You've got options that you still haven't explored.
So my problem is lack of hat ambition, really, rather than lack of vision.
You just need your eyes opening, I think, to all the different kinds of hats you could try.
I'm open. I want to workshop this for Mike's. This could be a quite good reality show, by the way. You find someone that has low hat confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to them. You meet their family over the course of an hour or so. And then at the end, you have the big reveal.
You
where
present them.
They come out wearing a beret. And so essentially, you have Mike wearing a beret.
Down into tears.
Everyone's crying. Everyone's just crying because Mike's wearing a purple Kangol beret. Yeah. And everyone is just in floods of tears.
Freddie Flintoff is in the background smiling. He's been doing the presenting. Yeah. He's absolutely delighted.
Yeah. Pam is howling. You've never heard her howl like that. And Mike, you're just so grateful. You're just saying thank you and sorry, thank you and sorry, everyone. And the tears are just loaded.
I never would have considered it. I just assumed it's a sort of cultural appropriation thing, and I didn't want to go down that road. But actually, it really suits me.
I've been scared to be myself, I suppose. Oh God. Oh, this beret.
And I thought that only Samuel L. Jackson could get away with wearing a Kangol like this, but it turns out I can.
You need to make sure in the middle of the show there's a bit of suspense, bit of a cliffhanger, you know, something's gone wrong in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Someone's backing a lorry with the, you know, constituent parts of the beret and it's got stuck somewhere in a bit of woodland or it's gone in a ditch.
It's Thursday evening and Mike has thrown the Kangol beret into a skip. Can't look at it. Take it away. It's rubbish. Like me and my stupid head. It's rubbish.
No, Mike, we've just got you the wrong size. This is our fault. Let's try some other sizes. We've got this tiny beret made by some, what are they called? What are hat makers called? Ferriers? No.
Milliner?
What? Milliner. What's a ferrier? They
A fairy is someone who they make fairies. Is someone who documents fairies. Doesn't exist.
Yeah,
I think you're
thinking
of a farrier who does something to do with horseshoes.
Don't they turn rabbits into like woodland freezers? You know.
Who does that?
Ben's saying that's a farrier.
No, it's a harrier.
That's a kind of jump. That's like a jet, isn't it?
That's not going to help.
Cordwainer. Cooper. All these old jobs we've lost.
Spitzer. Crumbler. Flanman.
And pistachio welders who weld every 12th pistachio nut shell together. So it can't be opened without using your teeth.
Who are we getting to put? So who's presenting this program with the hats thing? I'm feeling like it might be a good way to get Gok Wan back into the public consciousness.
Ah, could be.
Well, I think Gok Wan and Flintoff.
You need Flintoff at every man angle. You need someone who doesn't know their way around hats, right?
You want a, how on earth are these two going to get on?
Guest judge every week with a bit of skin in the hat game. So the likes of Boy George.
Yeah, or just any of the famous milliners. Any of your
the top British milliners.
Any of your top British
brand, isn't it?
The Great British Milliner Challenge.
Chris Stetson and Gillian Pork Pie. They'd probably come along.
Gillian Pork Pie, I think she's sort of been cancelled. Could we ever have fully automated beans? That was the terrifying but viscerally real and close idea, wasn't it?
I think we worked out the technology is probably only weeks away.
Yeah.
In fact, by the time you're listening to this, it might be too late and we might have been assimilated into a laptop somewhere or a smart radiator. We don't know.
Yeah.
We were talking about artificial intelligence, of course, but there's nothing artificial about what you're about to hear. This is all real flesh and blood banter.
IR beans.
Three red-blooded human beings.
Can robots ever achieve lukewarm banter? Can they get that perfect temperature of banter that we achieve, which is lukewarm? My suspicion is with robots, it'll always be a little bit too hot. Are a little bit too cold.
Yeah, there'll be a little too much substance in there somewhere. It won't just be immediately forgettable.
Exactly.
Or unhelpful.
There'll be a point they're making or a proper joke. Mm-hmm.
There's that ineffable quality of it being so unsubstantial as to almost be the opposite. Mm. It's like antimatter somehow. It's sucking in matter from everywhere else and tururning it into nothing somehow.
In facts and obliterating them to dust.
Yes. And there's some more of that here.
Well, I tell you what, the reason I didn't read out, I didn't talk about this AI thing, which was actually sent to us on the 29th of September 2021.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Is that my long-term goal, which I never got around to, was you can... If we'd all read a script into a machine, it would then learn our voices. Then we could have put the script into the machine and we've had a fully automated three bean salad.
Oh.
And that was always my plan, but I never got around to it because, you know, I've got.
You've got tight takeaways from here on. That doesn't do itself.
Yeah. You've got, you've got summer fruits to lube up. Yeah. Well, yeah, you could, because you know some keyboards, like Casio keyboards, will have a voice noise.
Mm.
Oh, it's always like that.
It's usually angelic. Though,
yeah, it's always like an angelic kind of, because what you don't get is the consonants, the kind of pop, because it, you know, there's a kind of popping.
Voice artist, Henry Pepper. Voice artist, Henry Pecker, talks us through the sounds of the human voice.
Breaking down the voice. What is sound? What is the voice?
Have you seen that clip from there was a BBC documentary about prehistoric people or Neanderthal people?
Oh, that's one of the greatest. I'm doing it. The guy doing the
they try and work out what they sounded like.
That's one of the greatest clips of all time. just
and he's taking some of the so boldest, seriously. Best guess, paleontology, anthropology.
You know what? If I ever met that guy, I'd love to take him out for a Sunday roast. He's given me so
I
much
bet
pleasure.
He loves talking about it. He must do.
What I don't understand is that they've got like a clay model of a voice box from a Neanderthal, and they show it to this guy, and he's like, "Yep, got this."
What they've done is they've brought in an actor, haven't they? They thought we need an actor to make this point because we need to show what a monkey's voice box. No, a Neanderthal man. They found a voice box, right? Haven't they?
Yeah.
Off an old Neanderthal person, and they want to mock up how that would sound. So they've got an actor in. And the actor's just turned up. His agent's
They had the choice. They either had a choice of stick a pair of bellows, stick a set of bellows in the bottom and give them a squeeze. Or hire an actor.
And the actor, his agent, I think the actor's probably turned up thinking maybe he's in the new Planet of the Apes film or something. I don't think he knows what the gig is.
The agent had a bollocking.
The agent had an absolute bollocking. I tell you, who's the real Neanderthal? You.
Take 15% of this.
At least Neanderthals could use tools. When's the last time you used your computer to book me a decent job?
Yeah. You are a tool.
And you are a tool as well. I should have thought of that. That was right there for me. Yes, maybe I should write my own stuff. Yes, well, maybe you can help me get some of those gigs. We don't help with that either. It's an absolute bloody joke. And actually, that clip has become huge, but I don't know if he's made any money out of it. I doubt it.
If you go on YouTube, just for the listener, if you go on YouTube and type in Neanderthal voice, you can find that. It's amazing we're not sponsored by John Lewis.
I know, we've really...
Did I tell you that I contacted Branston? So I've been given the email address of their head of marketing.
And did you get in touch?
I've not yet sent that email.
Wow, the circles you mix in now.
But I've
incredible. I've
got things have changed.
I've got the right email address, so we just need to. Maybe the listeners can help with this. We need to craft the most perfect pitch.
Yeah.
For Branston to sponsor this show.
I feel like we could open the world to Branston, isn't it? That's what we can offer. It's an international... Exactly. We can make their brand fully international.
We can take the flavours of the world, the flavours of Sri Lanka, of Vietnam, of Argentina, and we can completely overwhelm all of them.
We can completely disguise them.
With vinegary and pickle.
Essentially, a sort of flavour bushel, isn't it?
Yeah. Say goodbye to saffron, my friends.
Say goodbye.
Hello to a very
and
vinegary onion.
Feel it being
in a chunk.
Feel
form.
It being swamped in acrid, sort of sour veg liquid.
Ancient carrots.
Ancient. Primordial courgette.
I wonder if we should send them like a sort of an example of the kind of advert we could do.
The trouble is, though, that I think a lot of our Branston content has it always been positive. I think it has, hasn't it? Pretty much.
Well, so I started clipping out where we've talked about Branston to try and make a kind of show reel to send them, and instantly it's Henry talking about how it has the consistency of shit that's been puked out.
Right. Okay.
Do I say that?
Chundered turds, as Mike.
Okay. So there's the old snagging.
There's the odd little snagging point, isn't that? Is a snagging point for
because they're probably trying to move away from that.
The way ad people think is there'll be certain demographics who don't like the idea of regurgitating shit in there or eating. There'll be
ones that do, and which ones are they targeting?
Exactly.
Actually?
And there'll be territories. It's all very, very cynical. There'll be certain territories where it's seen as taboo to eat your own puke and then shit out. So was it shitting out the puke and then eating it? No,
it was the Branston had the consistency of shit that had been puked.
Puked shit. Right.
Whereas in Guernsey, for example, where they do that sort of thing all the time,
that'd be absolutely fine.
You know, you'd think that would be an easy marketing place, but actually, because they're doing it all the time, they don't need the pickle.
Yeah, that's exactly. The thing.
Also, I was going to send them a compilation of tweets that people around the world have sent us, because a lot of people have gone out and bought Branston off the back of our talking about it and sent us photographs. But very often they're saying, "What the hell is this stuff? This stuff is grotesque."
Yeah.
Which again, I don't think is going to feed into the ad men's
Yes.
That's not their dream mood board, I don't think.
I invited some friends around for dinner. I thought we'd have a Branston pickle-based starter. And my guests ended up shouting at me, "What is this? What is this? Some kind of alien blood?" That kind of thing. You cover a plate in alien blood, a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It is really nice, though. That's
it's
the thing.
Bloody lovely.
It's a really good food stuff.
Bin juice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It definitely has got a bin juice vibe, actually.
Well, it's got the exact texture and consistency of bin juice. It couldn't.
A chunky bin juice.
A chunky bin juice.
Bin juice, like an industrial bin juice.
Industrial bin juice. But basically, either the woman had bought a Miele dishwasher in the 70s and was returning it, or
with a view to getting a fresh one.
Yeah, I think with a view to getting a new
one.
Again, when you say returning it, was she holding it on her back?
They are the lightest dishwashers. The engineering,
and that generation is stoical. They've got grit.
They've got hugely dense, powerful arm and calf muscles. or she was telling
That's
me
what baby boomers mean is the biceps were the size of babies.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with the population.
Yeah. But she was, she was telling me that she'd bought a Miele dishwasher in the 70s and hadn't had a single problem with it. In fact, she hadn't taken it out of the packaging. it was that beautiful. The other thing which I've also probably said about John Lewis, which is true, is that I once went in to buy a toaster, and while I was there, the person serving me noticed that a button was missing on my coat, or was falling off. I had a loose button on my it was a navy maritime style pea coat, and one of the buttons was hanging off on a thread. And he said, "I'll deal with that for you if you want, sir." And while I was looking for toasters, they sent it up to haberdashery, and they fixed the button.
Turned into a sofa.
turned into a regal navy peacoat style sofa.
Stewing pot.
They fixed the button on while I was looking for toasters. Didn't even buy a toaster in the end.
But like, do you think we'll get to a stage where you go to John Lewis and it's, "Hello, I am John Lewis, Bart 5000. How may I help you?" Like, it's possible, right?
It depends who they feed into that AI, right? They might feed the obsequious guy in. They might feed the helpful haberdasher can-do guy in.
I don't think...
They might feed the old woman stooge in with her perfect dishwasher. We don't know.
I don't think you can ever replace that one-on-one human style service that you get in John Lewis, where you feel...
Watched.
You feel watched.
Judged.
Judged. And forgiven. For all your previous retail mistakes. And that now, only now, when this toaster or blender or desk fan is slotted, that there is a hole in you. There's a hole in your life, there's a hole in your soul, and it's in the exact shape of
a Dyson desk fan.
Of a Dyson desk fan. And
a £600 fan.
Of a £600 fan. And only when that is slotted into you, into your soul, will you be whole again. And that's you. And then you realise normally on the way home that you've just spent £600 on a fucking fan. What?
Ruined any chances of going on that holiday you were talking about with your loved one.
And now there's a holiday-shaped hole.
They're going to have a thing to say about it.
And now you've got a holiday-shaped hole in you.
You've magic beansed it, basically.
Yeah.
That's what you've done.
Yeah.
David emails, "Hello, Beans. I was fortunate enough to stay at a hotel this week, which looks to me the market leader in breakfast ham presentation. Yes, the summer may be over, but we'll always have those golden memories. The memories of the breakfast hams that we consumed. Whether German business traveller or Italian fun seeker, ham is always there for you at breakfast.
The Foreign Holiday Breakfast Buffet Ham Update."
Does that ham look right to you? I've included a photo below for your consideration.
Oh, yes.
He notes, please note, the cloche to effectively lock in moisture whilst reducing ham sweat.
That's interesting, isn't it?
I wouldn't want to see what those hams look like without a ham sweat reducer.
He looks like he's probably got there 8:45, I'd say. He's not too late to the party, but certainly there's a quarter of the display that has totally gone. And another chunk. So it looks like the prize hams have gone.
Also, have you noticed it's got a little label that the hotel have put next to it, which is selection of continental meats.
Well, they've got their hammer-fired chicken there.
They have.
Yes, they've got the white ham, which never gets touched. I don't know who that's for.
The really unpleasant thing about the photograph is that you can see where some hams have been.
Yes. They've left
there. They've
left
behind
footprints, haven't
they? Or they're sort of slime trail, isn't it? Like a ham leaves behind it.
And they've chosen a strange thing with that. They have put lettuce in, but whereas lettuce normally, I find it's normally at the periphery of the ham display, they put it dead centre under
the ham.
Quite a torn ham. So it's sort of poking through a bit like just a couple of pubes poking through a zip fly or something like that. Makes me think of.
You're right. It's almost as if the hams, they've inversed the usual relationship between the ham and the lettuce, which is the lettuce should be around the sides of the ham. They put the lettuce right in the centre, as if it's like you sort of get through the hams and you're rewarded with the lettuce centre. It just makes no sense at all.
And there's some sort of chorizo rose at the top.
Yes.
He describes this as the crowning glory, a decorative salami flour.
Salami flour.
Which seems to have like a wet spinach centre, is it?
It's not great. I think the more you look at it, it looks more like, you know when people make, I think it's called a terrarium, where you sort of put plants and things within a glass kind of jar, and then it creates an ecosystem within that where water hits the sides, condenses, and then rains essentially back down onto the plants.
So a bit like a
Did he say where it was?
No.
To me, it's a bit like what, you know, which is timely in the news at the moment, a bit like what a miniature version of what a human colony on Mars would look like, isn't it? Because you've got a huge glass dome, Ben, as you say, which has it's an internal weather system.
Yeah.
But here...
A salami sitting on the throne.
A salami sitting on the throne. And what
and
you've
an
got...
an army of boiled eggs outside.
Yes, there is a sort of serried ranks of boiled eggs through it. You can see through it, which is quite weird. But the... what's odd is that the moisture, as you say, it is actually matte. I was thinking that the ham was shiny, but that's a surface shine off the glass dome. It is matte ham, isn't it?
Matte finish ham, yeah.
It's matte finish ham. So
I think what's happened here is, I think Mike asked earlier where this is. I think Mike's thinking what I'm thinking. This is a British ham display of continental hams, which I don't think actually fits within the purview of cube meats of the continent.
That is what I'm getting at. There's something about just the boiled eggs.
Hmm. Obviously,
well, they're boiled. They could be raw. I don't know. And the hams it smacks of a British buffet trying its best to.
Also, obviously, in the continent, they don't think of continental hams as continental hams. So they just think of them as hams, and they think
the little label would just say hams,
and they think of British hams as island hams. That's what they call them. But just to quickly finish the point about the internal weather system of the glass dome, I think what's happening is the moisture, which is. It's using essentially a space colonization technology here.
Yeah.
Because what happens is the moisture has evaporated off the hams, has risen to the top of the dome, will eventually, probably a couple of hours later, form clouds.
Yeah.
And then what you've got is the prospect of ham rain falling back onto these hams and re-moistening.
In the middle of a ham drought.
They are currently in the middle of a ham drought.
Yeah. And then they get a ham deluge.
They get a ham deluge.
They're over-soaked.
Yeah.
They get ham flooding.
Yeah.
It's a question of when you harvest your ham, isn't it? When you open that dome and get the ham out, you need to get it exactly the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, David. That's the first listener submitted continental hams. But I think I'm concluding those aren't continental hams. Those are a British facsimile.
But the effort
of
is
continental hams,
nonetheless.
Yeah.
Not appreciated. Sorry, Mike.
No, it's also not nice to see, especially in a hotel. So, you know, the central ham underneath, there's a sort of, they've mocked up a ham plinth, basically, using lettuce with some ham on top of it as a kind of I suppose, regal-looking sort of throne almost for the central...
Yeah. A dais, is that what it's called?
A raised dais for the chorizo rose. But what's happened is that ham, it's very, very horrible. Not nice to see. It's collapsing under its own weight. So you've got ham tearing.
Yeah, the tearing.
Which is...
You can see it groaning under the weight of the chorizo king.
It's a fully prolapsed ham, isn't it?
Yeah, and you don't want to see that. Is that part of a tongue? But I'm right, there's part of a tongue.
Yeah, part of a tongue.
Yeah. The more I think about this, the less happy I am you sent this to us, David. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then, of course, finally, we talked about, we had the, so I don't even know what to call it.
Well, it ended up being titled Rats in the end, that episode.
Yes.
Which arguably wasn't even a real episode because there was no topic. And so because of that, there's no extra stuff from the topic.
It was barely an episode. It was more like a series of physical challenges, which Henry had to...
Well, that's it. There wasn't even extra stuff. The intro was just as it was. I mean, it was already huge enough and catastrophic. So you lived that with us. And I think it's best if that episode is consigned to history. And thank goodness there isn't more of that episode, frankly. That's our gift to you.
Well, because there was extra bits. For example, the bit where Henry got mauled by a wolf that got into his flat.
Oh, yeah.
The bit where the rhinoceros came in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we can't share that stuff.
There was the face leeches.
You had a Habsburg militia marching in at one point, didn't you? Trying to take over, declare a little independent enclave.
I had to marry one of them.
Yeah. That's going to be weeks of paperwork dealing with that, untangling yourself from that.
Have you written to the Pope?
I've sent him an email.
Oh. Yeah. He's not hot on email.
He's not good on emails, I know.
Yeah. And you send it to the Yahoo, but then you find out that he's actually not checking that one anymore. And
he's not checking it once in a blue moon. Yeah.
And then I think he's on Outlook now, but you know, he moves.
Yeah, but the trouble is he can use it on his phone. He can't use it on his computer.
Right.
And he doesn't know how to unlock his phone. So once it's unlocked, he can use it.
Yeah. Right. So fingers crossed that annulment comes through. I think I share. Me and Michael feel the same way. You know, it'd be good if you could somehow strike that marriage quite quickly. Because Margaret of Anjou, or no, where is she from? Because Margaret of Estonia she's a bit much. Don't like to talk about people like that, but she's a bit much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, the people of Ghent are absolutely convinced that you're on the cusp of invading now that you've allied. So, we need to reassure them as well, because we might have some listeners there.
Yes. So, people of Ghent, we're not, I am not amassing a giant land army to take over Ghent.
Yeah.
Something very clear.
So, thanks for listening, everyone. And thank you very much indeed for patroning our Patreon-y.
By the way, when Henry said that about Ghent, I could see across the Zoom that he had his fingers crossed.
Watch out, Ghent. Here he comes.
Bye.
Cheerio all. Ta-ra.
Bye all.